You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Curtain up theater people, and welcome to your program Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler and I'll be your host. Your program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, your program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. My guests on tonight's show are director Jen Haltman and actor Becca Schneider, who are also the founders of their own theater company, Between Two Burrows. Jen and Becca will be discussing the world premiere of Cherise Greene's Cannibal Galaxy, A Love Story, a new play centering around a group of employees at a science museum whose lives and world, after an act of violence occurs, shift into a magical realism as they grapple to make sense of what's happened. Now, I'm super excited to delve into this production because I have a feeling that there are so many angles to this really, really cool and interesting play. So let's bring them on. Ladies, welcome and thank you for being on this episode of your program, Is Your Ticket.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, before we get into the production company and the play, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourselves?
Jen. I'll start.
Jen.
Hi, I'm Jen.
I'm a
director and casting director here in the city, and I'm also a freelance producer.
And I'm Becca. I'm an actor also here in the city. I live in Queens, and Jen lives in Brooklyn, hence the name of our company. And I started producing when we started this company a few years ago, but before that I was just pursuing acting.
How long have you known each other?
We've known each other since undergrad. We weren't really friends in undergrad, but we knew of each other. And we didn't really become friends until after college.
I would say it's been 12 years.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Since I was Jen's intern at New York Theater Workshop, she was the casting associate there for many years. And after I graduated, after her, because I'm younger, her intern the fall after I graduated, and that was when our friendship first officially began.
Wow, very, very cool. That's great. Can you go into a little more detail about Cannibal Galaxy, A Love Story, just so we can establish the show and what it is we're discussing, please?
Sure. So this is our third production as a company. We knew we wanted to venture into new work for the first time, and this play fell into our laps a little bit because the playwright, Cherise Greene, mm-hmm. is a friend of ours, and she is an actor, director, dialect coach, and new writer. She's been working on this piece for 6 years or so, and we both happened to read it, and we fell in love with the piece and knew we wanted to do something that had political undertones, overtones?
Tones.
Under and over.
And something that would challenge us to and be bigger than our last productions in, you know, the most basic sense. And that's kind of, what was the question?
I was just asking you if you could go into a little more detail about the play itself. Talk a little bit about some of the themes and the messages that are in the show.
Sure.
So the play takes place in a science museum in Washington, D.C. It's set in 2015. And we see the lives of the workers in the museum, the employees there, and they go about their days, and they have challenges with dating and their parents and relationships in general.
Very slice of life.
Yes. Hyper real. And then something kind of happens at the museum that I don't want to give away. Come to the show. And the lives shift. And we see how they both, how they're dealing with the same things and also this new, larger thing, and how you kind of have to live your life despite terrible things happening in the world. And when that happens, when the event happens, the world shifts as well.
So it expands.
Expands, cracks open, and we kind of venture into this magical realism, which is super fun and a challenge to produce in the best way.
So are there effects going on throughout the show? I mean, I know you don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Sure.
But are there, I mean, it feels like there are things
that
are happening.
There are surprises that happen, for sure. And I think it's, we talk about this play a lot, kind of akin to Angels in America, in the structural sense that the world is normal until it isn't. Mm-hmm. So how do you take a hyper-realistic moment and crack it open for a little bit and see what how the universe can kind of infuse reality?
That's, wow.
I don't know how articulate that was, but...
And technically speaking, I mean, design is important in any show, mm-hmm. of course.
Sure.
But with something like this, when we do have to venture and juxtapose both, like, the fluorescent world of a room... At a museum, and then kind of jump into outer space, we rely heavily on the sound and lights and projections. We're working with a projection designer. We've never used projections in previous
productions.
No,
we have an incredible design team who's kind of taken this huge challenge very enthusiastically, and we are making these big, bold choices together as a team and figuring out how the world... what the world looks like before, what it looks like after, how we can infuse both things, and what is normal after something new happens. What is your new normal after a big event happens?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Now, I want to ask so many questions, but I feel like answers will be spoilers. Is there this much mystery in this piece?
I mean, you already kind of referred to it in the opening. I think we can talk about it a little bit. We won't get into specifics, but Charisse started writing this play after the Sandy Hook shooting, mm-hmm. In 2012. She was in a science museum in D.C. at the time when she found out the news and was grappling with that tragedy and started writing as a way to share her experience of...
And process
what was going on. In most of America's hearts that day. And with each event, with each tragic event that has happened since then, she continued to write. And this play, I think, tries to address, or not tries, it addresses the idea of how, we always talk about it, of like, how do we deal with the impossible? Like, waking up to the news in Parkland, or, I mean, you could list any number of cities, Vegas, Indiana, you know, Orlando, how do you wake up to that news and then still make eggs and go to work and go see a movie with your friend? So that's the idea, I think, behind the play of, like, coping with the violence epidemic in our country.
I have a very vivid memory of when the Paris attack happened. I was meeting Becca to go see Dames at Sea that night, and we just kind of stared at each other and then had to do the thing that we were scheduled to do.
To go see a ridiculously happy-go-lucky tap musical.
Yeah, and I think that so much of this country is trying to figure out how to live their lives when, and we like to say in our marketing, as America eats itself alive.
Wow.
Live their lives and yet not become numb to not let this constant stream of news and violence be okay and be normal and be something that we go, oh, well, of course that happened, even though I think that's already kind of
I think
happening.
That's definitely happening.
I agree. I think it feels like that. It's every day I feel like the line is being pushed further and further and further.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when I wake up and I think, you know, 30 years ago, this would have gotten a president impeached and they'd be resigning right then and there on the spot, you know, not to... It's an easy go-to, you know, the presidency right now. But it does feel like we accept more and more and more every day. And we just kind of throw up our hands and we do go about our... And I'm really having a hard time in my own mind just thinking about squaring Dames at Sea with the shooting in Paris, because that was a very, very up number. I don't know how you would have possibly done it. And I wonder how the actors reacted to something like that. Anyways, I'm rambling here. So, while you're directing it, what are some of the small, little miracles that are happening because of the fact that you're directing the show with big events and elements occurring, but obviously your theater isn't. I mean, is your theater big?
It's the New Ohio, so it's a cavernous black box, I think is.
I like that word choice.
Way to describe it. So it's what's great about it for this play is that it has all these structural columns and it feels really museum-y.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are kind of carving out this space in the middle for this bleak break room. So we can feel I'd like to describe this play a lot as macro-micro and thinking about the smallness of all of us in this big universe, how we have to make eggs and deal with shit happening in the world. So the idea of this small box in this cavernous space felt right in trying to accomplish both of those things.
Okay. I guess what I'm alluding to is often I will talk to people and one of the themes of my show is working on smaller productions and featuring those. And, you know, in Angels in America, as you referenced, the world literally does crack open and a giant angel flies in. And that's tough to do in a small theater. But I found that what directors have found and people who are working on shows that have big elements is that they challenge themselves to make that work in a small space, and ideas of genius occur, like things that you would have never even thought of to do using, I don't know, fabrics and different lighting schematics and things to accomplish that. Is that happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are trying to draw on all of the resources that we can.
Sure.
In this, you know, given a small budget and a relatively, you know, we don't have, what is it for Harry Potter, $68 million?
and a completely redesigned theater.
Totally.
And yeah.
So how do you, I mean, I think what it all comes down to is how do you tell the emotional truth and just highlight that with design and really underscore the emotion of it. So I think figuring out how to light something and literally underscore with sound to just highlight the beautiful, simple choices that people are making.
Right, because... I cut you off.
Ahead.
I was just going to say a lot of it also... It comes down to the actors, too, of how much can be communicated with just our bodies and emotion and how that can be just as moving and effective without... I mean, I'm sure... Keep the secrets. I haven't seen Harry Potter, but I'm sure the magic is astonishing.
Sure.
And we might not have magic tricks, but there is...
There's deep emotional truths. And I think not relying on bells and whistles is sometimes harder to be vulnerable and tell the story. I think that's ultimately what this story is how do we stay vulnerable and connect to other people? I think the bigger challenge in this play has been not giving away things. You know, like when we have a big event happening in a play, how do you not telegraph that at the beginning? Mm-hmm. And play, you know, making sure that we don't play the end.
Right.
And remembering that people are still, they have to go to work. And there's stuff to do. So it had to not sit in that.
And there's still stuff to laugh about. We always say,
oh, it's very funny.
We always talk about the play and then we go, and it's funny, which is true.
It's very true.
Like even amidst like the worst times of our lives, all we do is make jokes. I know that's my constant go-to defense mechanism, and it's how we keep things light and it's how we move forward. And I think, we've talked about the one of the traps of this play can be to sink into this the darkness that, of course, is a part of it, but it's not the only part, and there is a great deal of heart and love and humor.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
I always say that I'm never funnier than when I'm in a hospital. That's when I'm constantly cracking one joke after another. Perhaps it's a defense mechanism for when we fall into those horrifying situations. I mean, our brains can only accept so much tragedy. Mm-hmm. And so I don't doubt for a second that there's humor in it. Plus, I think that, you know, every good drama has to have a lot of comedy and vice versa. So I'm sure Charisse is skilled enough to know that.
Yes.
And that's terrific. Now, you talked about how at times you would need to convey to the actors, hey, in this case, you're going to need to really show the emotion of what's happening with this large event. Have you developed a system or a balance of knowing when to let the effects do the work and when you need to have the actors doing the work for that? I mean, is that happening in your mind?
I think it's happening organically in the room. I think in the writing, there's some really impossible stage directions in this play. Like, Eloise explodes into stars, and Jo gives birth to herself. So figuring out how to do that physically, I think we're trying to do that with as much physicality as possible, and then let the design kind of highlight and underscore that, as opposed to really relying on it. It's a system of checks and balances, I think, because you don't want the tech to do the storytelling.
Sure, right. And sometimes it weighs more heavily on tech, and sometimes a little bit more heavily on the
actors.
And
there's certainly at least one or two scenes where we are relying on tech a lot more, and the actors are just connecting with each other, but there's stuff happening around them. So that's been a challenge in the room of reminding the actors to trust that what they're doing is enough, that we're getting the storytelling, and that they don't need to worry about that.
Well, actors are on the stage, and they're usually not seeing a lot of what's going on mm-hmm. with the tech. I remember when my husband and I did our play, he performs the play, and I'm like, oh, you're doing great, you're doing wonderfully, and you don't have to overplay that moment, it's all happening. And it wasn't until he saw a film version of it where he was like, oh, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. that's actually occurring. So there's got to be a lot of trust in the director.
I was just about to say, there's a lot of trust that's required when we're, you know, rolling around on the floor or jumping in the air, and we might feel silly or like we're not doing enough or doing too much, and we just have to trust that when afterward when we finish and Jen's like, yeah, Great. Good. Again, you know. But we can tell from our assistant director and just the group their response to what we're doing, and yeah, they're because we all have to be so vulnerable at different parts of this play. There's a safety that is there's a we all have to feel safe and ready to experiment and try things and play.
Oh, absolutely, especially in a piece like this. When you're talking about people exploding into stars and giving birth to themselves, I would
everyday
imagine.
Occurrences. I don't know what you're talking
of course, yeah, did it this morning. Gave birth to myself this morning. What's the mood like in the rehearsal room, dealing with all of these elements and this dynamic play? How do you keep the mood?
I like to have it be. And a room driven by safety through vulnerability, or vulnerability and safety combined. So
sure.
I like to encourage the actors to go with their organic impulses, and I feel like my job is more to curate ideas as opposed to lead with too many, because I can certainly have ideas, but if they're not right for the characters, then they're not going to sing in the same way. So I'm trying to really encourage everyone to bring their ideas into the room, and we figure out what's best for the play, what's going to serve the story in the best way.
What do you mean by curate instead of lead with ideas?
So instead of saying, like, I need you to stand here and cross here and sit here, I'd rather see what feels right for the actors in the scene, and a lot of it is... you know, here is this room. These are the confines of the space. Let's see what you want to do.
What are your instincts
yeah.
leading you to do? Because there's a lot of, like, I've been in rehearsals where it's stand here, be angry here, sit down, look in this exact spot. You know, an experience where it's more organic, and then eventually we're gonna solidify. Are blocking.
Oh yeah,
but
for
it's
sure.
it's very much there's like an improv aspect to it, and going with what your gut is telling you. You know, like, oh, I think I need to sit down here, and then or being like, actually, that didn't feel right. Can we try it again? And yeah, a kind of open plane.
And I think particularly for a play that is dealing in realism, you want it to feel real to the actors and to the characters. And I'm not going to know that. I'm not in their bodies. And I'm not doing the same kind of work with their characters in an intimate way that they are. I have the larger play that I'm keeping in mind, but the beats and the nitty-gritty is for them to bring into the room and that work.
Now, let's say we're at rehearsal and we're all finished. Do you go in at the very end and say, okay, this is what we're working on tomorrow, bring your ideas tomorrow for this chunk of the play? Or is it more like, we're going to work on this today, and I want you to just do what feels naturally, so that the actors aren't necessarily planning what they're doing? I'm just trying to
yeah,
hone down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've had a weekly schedule, and the actors know what scenes are doing. It's a 21-scene play, so we have to be very judicious and meticulous about our schedule, because, of course, not everyone's in every scene. So we've had to rehearse out of order just to be mindful of everyone's time.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Like, we're going to do scenes 5, 7, and 12 tonight, so they have an idea of what we're going to do, and then we can kind of work in the confines of that structure.
And then pull it all together, like, in tech?
We've been...
This week, really.
Yeah, this week we've been starting to really, like, work through the play and do transitions and, like, okay, when we end scene 15, you have to go here for scene 16, and this is where you're going to live for this scene, and it we're in logistic land right now.
And sequencing.
Mm-hmm.
What does sequencing mean?
Oh, just because we've been rehearsing out of order, you know, we staged the whole thing in a week. Like, we got a basic skeleton over the course of a week, and then did a stumble through where we put it all together and ran through it for the first time. And I know every time I ended a scene, I would go, I have no idea what comes next. I know the next time I do something, but I don't know what happens in between it because I haven't been at the other rehearsals that are for the scenes I'm not in. So we're trying to get a sense now of
what the whole play is.
What the whole play is and what it looks like and what it looks like for each of our characters so that we can think about things like arcs.
I'm fascinated.
Your emotional journey.
The narrative. I'm fascinated by this, by how you're putting this whole play together. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of a rehearsal process that's been like this.
Well, we've had some, when you're working on a showcase, you don't necessarily have the luxury of calling everybody all the time. So if we have a schedule where we're missing one actor this day because they're shooting a TV show and, like, of course they need to do those things. So we need to just be smart about how we schedule stuff.
And work around conflicts.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, there's an actor in the show who isn't in the first 30 pages and it's not respectful to expect her to be here for every single rehearsal. You know, we're unfortunately just not paying enough because it's a showcase.
So. Sure. No.
So we just try to
be mindful of everyone's time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, everyone has to, what I like to say, water the money tree. You know, you have to make the money because we all live in New York and it's expensive. You need a lot of money to live here. And so it's very considerate of you to do that. And I hear that a lot from people that I interview. What qualities in Cannibal Galaxy, A Love Story, attracted you into selecting it as a production for Between Two Burrows?
We recently rewrote our mission statement this year, and we at Between Two Burrows choose plays that scare us, and this play scared us reading it. With the stage directions that we talked about and the ambition of it, and it just seemed like a really good fit for us, dealing with something so topical and important.
And new,
yeah.
Our previous productions have already existed in the world, and we did The Understudy by Teresa Rebeck, and we did a Charles Mee play called Summertime, and we messed with that script a bit with Chuck's permission and played a little bit, but this was new territory in the sense that, you know, the playwright's been in the room and she was with us for table work and we've been tweaking as needed, and it's alive because it's changing as we speak. And I lost my train of thought.
And
what are we talking about?
We're talking about things that scare us.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. We choose projects that scare us. And that will ideally
push us
and our audience to have a dialogue or to think about things they haven't thought about in a new way. And this play terrifies us for all the reasons we've already talked about. And, you know, and we say that choosing a project that scares us in the sense of us as producers, of Jen as a director and myself as an actor. Jen always directs and I'm always in it. And so we can't just pick a play that, like, you know, I love Shakespeare. If I really want to be in Twelfth Night, but Jen doesn't feel a connection to it, then we're not going to do that. Or as much as I love the play Proof, I want to play Catherine more than ever. But that, what are we saying by doing that right now? You know, why this play now is another question that we ask all the time. And that this play has many answers to that question.
Yeah.
I believe this is your mission statement here. We choose projects that scare us. Through empathy, humor, and bold simplicity, we share stories that embrace the impossibilities of life, love, and art. We foster a community of artists who choose to take risks and, through the work, incite conversations about our world. We want you to be a part of that conversation. That's excellent. I love that mission statement.
Thank you. We worked really hard on it.
Did you? Oh, my gosh. No. Mission statements.
They're hard. They're really hard.
They take longer than people realize.
We had an epic brainstorm session of what are the things that we're actually trying to do as artists, and just like we had a big list of vocabulary that we were
what
like,
are
well,
the things about each
this
of the plays that we that connect them, and why do we pick certain projects, and yeah, just kind of looking inside of ourselves in a really deep way.
Well, it's your values. It's your challenges. Mm-hmm. It's what have you learned through the other two plays that you did?
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to ask, what did you learn through doing those two plays that caused you to say, we're going to change things a little bit? Did certain truths come to you, or did you have a conversation and just said, you know what, I want to do this?
Actually, it was more that Jen's being kind by saying we rewrote our mission statement. It was more that we made one. We had one that was just a lot more generic, and because I don't know how sure we were about this company or about pursuing this again. You know, the understudy kind of happened by accident, and it went really well, and we worked really well together, and it was a big success. So we thought, oh, let's do this again, and then we kept realizing that we wanted to keep doing things. So we
needed to kind of crystallize our ideas in a more meaningful way. But our placeholder mission statement was just...
It was thin.
It was boring and generic.
So we wanted to have, after our last production, we wanted to have a real logo and have a real mission statement before diving into this project. I mean, we've been working on this play for close to 2 years now. It's been in development for a long time. But yeah, I think if anything, it just, what we learned from the previous productions is it solidified our desire and confidence in doing this together.
Our commitment to each other and to making productions.
You know, I think that's really interesting for audiences to hear, because I don't think audiences really... My audience is, at least, I don't know if they necessarily hear about the evolution of a new theater production company. They don't understand that there's always thought going into it, to changing it. I think you have to be nimble. You have to be open enough to tell yourself, you know, things need to be tweaked in this manner, especially early on. Because it is, you know, in essence, it is a business. It's an art, but it's a business as well, that the two of you are running, and businesses have to have mission statements, mm-hmm. and they have to be nimble, and you have to be smart about that, because you're producers in addition to being an actor and a director.
Yeah, and you have to know what you're good at and what you're not good at, and know when to fill in those gaps with people who are better at those things than you, and knowing when to not have an ego. And I think that working where we've worked as we've kind of grown up in our careers thus far, it's been about the work and what's the best thing for the play. So having kind of been reared on that, you have less ego, because you want to make the product the best thing it is. And if I'm not the person to market it, then like I should find somebody who can do that better. And we should invest in that for the company, because it's only going to make the work better. And then we don't have to do a subpar job on something we're not going to excel at.
Now, you two are the founders of Between Two Burrows. And you say it's been around for about 2 years now, right? Two, three?
Four.
Four now?
Yeah.
Okay, 4 years. And you're getting to the point now where... Are you just getting to the point now to where you're delegating some of that work? And if you are, how does it feel after having done the work for so long to hand over marketing to somebody else?
It's been amazing and challenging all at the same time. It's so rewarding to have our team grow and to have people want to work with us again. You know, we've had designers come back and people in the and company management return and want to, you know, as you've probably experienced with many of these interviews, like all these showcase productions and smaller productions, it's a lot of passion for not a lot of money. You know, we're spending a lot of time, and we're not making any money from mm-hmm. this project. We're paying all of our people, and if we make any ticket sale money, it's going to go toward another show. We're not in this for nobody in the theater world is in it for the money. So we've kept returning to it because of our love for it and because we felt we had something to say. And now that we have this community of people around us who feel the same way and challenge us and that we learn from constantly, it's been delightful. And yet at the same time, we were very used to just running things by each other. And we also kind of think the same way. So it was easier when it was just the two of us because we didn't have to get approval from more people.
Sure, right.
But so yes, maybe there's now a little bit more red tape, but we also have more advice and opinions, and
it's freeing. It allows us to do our jobs in a fuller way, and we can delegate and know that stuff's going to be getting done because the people who are on our team are smart, capable, amazing people.
Like, we could praise any one of them for hours, but I'll single out Zipporah Kaplan, for example.
Yes.
So for the understudy, we were new to producing. I didn't know especially what I was doing. Jen had a little more knowledge than I did, but
only a little more.
Only a little. And we didn't have a production manager on the show, someone who led tech and arranged for
production meetings and
liaised between the designers. And I didn't know there was such a thing.
I just knew we couldn't afford such a thing.
Right.
And I basically
that's where
did
my
all
mind
that.
Went right yeah. there. Yeah.
And then our second show, our set designer was like, "Are you going to have a production designer?" And I said, "What's that?"
I know, right?
And we were introduced to Zip, and who is now our general manager. And I don't know what we would do without.
She's just a unicorn princess goddess.
Covered in glitter.
She's incredible.
She is so good at her job. And then she also designed this. She designed our poster. So whereas last time we like were scouring the internet for cool photos, you know? So we have a graphic designer now, and we have our company manager who's handling the comp tickets and our associate producers. And it's just great. It feels great to know that we have people who have our back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, I mean, I'm so glad that you're giving them props. I really am. But I think that the fact that you have opened your minds and you have said, you know what? I want this to grow. I want this production company to grow. I want to do new things. I want new opinions and new thoughts into it. And you've let yourself go there is amazing. And you two should you pat yourselves on the back for doing it. I mean, you know, and I really, really mean that. I think you're in it. You were in it. So you're into the schedule of what's today and what are we doing today? Do I have my lines learned and all of that? I'm outside of it. And what I'm hearing is a theater company that has its ego in the right place. And that is in providing good theater that's challenging, that has priority for you. And I really think that's
thank you.
Like
thanks.
Super cool.
Yeah. You know, we believe the work is important. Otherwise it's not, none of this is worth it.
No, not at all.
Quite honestly.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And somebody asked me a few weeks ago, I think I told you this, somebody asked me if I liked the play. I don't know. And I was like, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be putting
it's not worth it
70 hours a week into this for this, you know, why else? I have to more than like the play to put this much time and energy and love into something.
And recruit other humans into doing it.
For 11 performances only. You know, it's 2 years for a week and a half.
Right.
And who knows what's going to happen in the future, but that's all we can count on right now. That's all we have control over, so we're going to do the best damn job that we can because we believe in this play and we believe that people should see it. And
we want the play to have a larger life outside of these 11 performances. So we need to do our best work to make the play attractive to other people.
Oh, absolutely. If I'm reading my notes here correctly or what I pulled up from the internet, it looks like, are you the first full production for Cannibal Galaxy, A Love Story? It looks like there might have been...
There was a workshop production.
A workshop.
Xavier right. University. The university produced it in their theater
in Cincinnati.
Department.
And Charisse and I had the great pleasure to go see it there. And it was a really lovely production. The students did wonderful work. And Tiffany Nicole Green did a beautiful job directing
right.
it. And they had, I think, just one weekend of performances, and there was a one-week workshop there the year before where Charisse and Fault Line Theater were able to go and develop it and made some beautiful strides with the play, and a lot of work was done by them, and we are fortunate to give it a little bit more life here and have age-appropriate actors in the roles and be able to show Charisse what her play is.
Oh, that's so nice. Tell me about Charisse Green.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Sorry, we're only pausing because we're both smiling really big. we love her a great deal. Charisse is a friend of both of ours, but I met her first.
You sure did.
We met probably over 6 years ago now, and we became friends and supported each other as fellow actors in the city. She's a wonderful coach, and when I applied to grad school, she coached me on my monologues. And
is she a dialect coach, is what I read?
Yes, she was coaching me just in general acting, but she is also a dialect coach.
Incredible.
To the stars. Dialect coach to the stars.
Awesome.
And over time, I guess at some point I introduced her to you.
I met her as an actor at a play that she was doing with Blessed Unrest.
Yes, another company that both Charisse and I work with. And I think she sent out one of her like update blasts that she'd finished writing this play a few years ago, and I asked if I could read it, and then a year went by and I was like, oh, you should read this. Charisse is she's a new mother. She has a beautiful daughter named Mariah, and
congratulations, Charisse.
Congrats.
For when you listen.
And I think that's only fed her love and desire for the play as well. But she is, it's funny, it's ironic to me as I stumble over these words, she is one of the more articulate, eloquent human beings I've ever met. And I feel inadequate because I can't find the words to describe her. Like, she's concise and help me.
She's kind and a deep storyteller and just one of the more beautiful humans that I know.
Yeah. And you know what? She's originally from Laguna Beach, California.
Yes. Correct.
And I'm from Southern California.
Oh.
And I have family that lives in Laguna Beach, so I'll just, you know, that's just my minor connection to Charisse, but, you know, she's a Californian originally, and so, hey, props to California and the talent that comes out of it.
She has quality about her, too, that West Coast energy that we do not have.
No. We're tightly wound.
Exactly, we're much more tightly wound. Yeah. There's a reason why she has all of those different titles of actor, dialect coach, acting coach, teacher, director. You know, she communicates so beautifully and in so many different ways that she can't stop expressing herself, and nor would I want her to.
No, please don't stop.
Wow, no, she's
sorry, Charisse.
That's okay. You can gush over Charisse.
She knows that I love her deeply.
Well, yeah. I mean, it sounds like she really earns her props, and you know, and she's a new mom, so. You know, it's always nice to throw compliments to a new mom, you know, who's taking care of kids all day and
for
all
sure.
That. So, you know, that's very nice. I love it.
And knowing that, like, you know, we believe so much in Charisse and in this play, which I've already said countless times, but it makes it all the more terrifying in the best way, that we want to do it and her justice. And it's been great to have her. She was at rehearsal yesterday, and to have her come in and see what we've been working on. And
it's so useful. She's not been in the room for a lot of the process, and I think as an actor working on new plays, she understands how potentially terrifying it is to have the playwright in the room, and I wanted her to also have distance to be able to see what we made and see if it works, and she was able to smartly come in and assess some things that just needed slight tweaks to make the scenes that much better, and it was invaluable having her there.
Yeah, it could go both ways, having the playwright in the room. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it just depends upon the sort of the personality of the playwright and how they handle themselves, the professionalism. And so it's nice to hear that she's, you know, handling it well and doing what she's supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. in the room, which is to add to the experience. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes the writer has to take away from the experience, but that's just if they're cutting all of the lines that they think are really, really good, but aren't working. That's just the writer and me coming out. Which,
but she's so open to any kind of change if something isn't working, and is willing to have any conversation that we want to have, and it makes it clear when something is important to her, and makes it clear when she has no opinion about something at all, and it's been a wonderful collaborative process.
Is this her first play?
It is.
It is.
Oh wow, that's great. Wow, to have your first play picked up and done in New York, that in itself is, that's killer. That's awesome.
Wow. I think so.
I was throwing out killer and awesome, you know, because I'm a California boy. So I figured I'd throw out some California terms. Anyways, this has been terrific. What a great interview you two have given. I mean, so amazing. I mean, what a really cool way to approach rehearsing and putting up a play. I mean, it's fascinating. Now, before I say goodbye, would either of you like to share your social media information or mention an upcoming project, either with Between Two Boroughs or another company you're with?
Social media wise, well, for Between Two Boroughs, if you're interested in seeing the play or learning anything about our history or who we are, or our future, or any tense in the world, we can be found at betweentwoboroughs.com or on Instagram at Between Two Boroughs and Facebook at Between Two Boroughs.
We're consistent in our branding.
Good.
And
smart.
Technically have a Twitter page, but I don't understand Twitter, so.
Me either.
We kind of let that die a little bit. But you can follow me on Instagram at Becca Schneids.
Love it. That's great.
Upcoming projects, Jen.
I work on a recurring show called Cast and Loose Live. It's based on a Tumblr curated by Lynn Marie Rosenberg, where she curates and we have conversation about the unfortunate casting breakdowns that exist in the world and where that starts. Talking about ableism and racism and ageism and
all the isms,
and we put together a staged reading of just horrific breakdowns to kind of shine a light on the industry and how far it really needs to go. And we're doing one of those August 27th at Joe's Pub. I believe
I've heard of this.
Yeah.
I've heard of this.
Of the show?
I have. Yeah, I read about something. Yeah.
Fun. They're really
wow.
funny.
I think we're doing our seventh at Joe's Pub now.
Oh my god, it's so cool.
I know, it's a lot. It's great. And we get phenomenal actors, and it's one night only per show. And this upcoming show is about gender nonconforming and it's all about inclusivity and respect and remembering that a breakdown is a job notice, and how can we be more professional in how we're conducting ourselves in this industry. I think obviously there's a large shift happening overall, but how can we start before you even bring the actors in the room by showing that you're respectful of them and their time and their talents and writing better characters?
Wow. Well, it's getting out there, I tell you, because, I knew your names and I knew a little bit about you, but I arranged this particular show through your publicist. And so I wasn't really connected with you yet. Like I would have been mm-hmm. if I would have known, but I've heard of this.
Great.
I have. So whoever's supposed to get it out there, it's working.
Oh, great. Well, you should talk to Lynn at some point. She's an excellent interview as well.
Oh, I love it. Let's connect.
Great.
Please, let's connect.
We'll
I would love to do that. And you know what? The French fries at Joe's Pub are so good.
They're so good.
Oh, my gosh. And
I have an upcoming gig officiating this lady's wedding in August.
Well, congratulations.
Got her.
You stop.
Wow. Well, that's great. Congratulations
Thank
to you.
You. Thank you. There's been a moratorium on all wedding talk for the next couple of weeks as we finish putting up this show. But yes, of course, I'm very excited.
How fun. Oh, my God. That's so wonderful. You're getting married.
Great.
And you're producing and directing a play.
No big deal.
We're also producing and directing a wedding is what it feels
like. And producing, oh my gosh, right? It's like I always say, you know, what are we going to talk about after the wedding's over? Because everything's the wedding. But now you have like kind of like a 50-50 split. It's either we're talking about the play or we're talking about the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
But we
cool.
should be clear, we're not marrying each other.
Well, it would be weird if you were officiating
that's
your own
true,
wedding.
I did say that.
Yeah.
We'll cut this out.
Are you kidding? That's hilarious.
People think we're together all the time, so that
or sisters, one of the two.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. My husband and I are actually together, and people think we're brothers all the time. And sometimes we'll just tell them that we are. Who knows? Anyways, you two just. I hope you know how. I know you're in it, and I know you've got rehearsal tonight. But I hope you just realize if this is such a wonderful, charmed time for you. And I hope you know, stop and just appreciate what you've done. This is your third play, and you've revamped, you've done your mission statement, which I know could take 6 months because I've done mission statements before. And it's just so many good things are happening for you. And I wish you broken legs on the play. I really want to come and see it.
Thank Please you. Do.
Please.
And
I want
having you.
Everybody else to come and see it. So,
well, it's June 8th through 17th at the New Ohio. And if you go to our website, you can find all the information.
So cool. Sounds great. All right. Well, again, thank you very much for being
on
your program as your ticket.
Thank you for having us.
You're outstanding and excellent interviews, and I appreciate it. So,
thank you.
My pleasure. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung, the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, I'd like to thank Jen Haltman and Becca Schneider. They were sensational. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at Facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter, at Program Ticket, and I, too, am trying to figure out how to use it myself. The website is YourProgramIsYourTicket.com. How convenient is that? I'm on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please rate me and write me a review, subscribe, do all that stuff. It helps to increase my profile. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's lots of theater gems out there. So our next show, good night, theater people, and perfect.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.